This is a People First Radio podcast.
Situation tables are a method communities in British Columbia are using to try and connect individuals at risk of harm to services that could help them. At weekly meetings, members from different community organizations collaborate on how, when, and who they might be able to assist, focusing on people at risk of imminent harm. The model was pioneered in Surrey, and there are situation tables in a number of communities across the province, including Nanaimo, where it's now known as the Nanaimo Acute Response Table. Further north on the island, Port Hardy is getting ready to launch a situation table of its own. The community's chief administrative officer, Heather Nelson-Smith, joined me to share the details.
My name is Heather Nelson-Smith, and I am the chief administrative officer for the district of Port Hardy.
And Port Hardy is going to be home to a situation table very shortly. Can you tell me what that is?
So the table is a collaborative risk-based triage model that is designed to swiftly connect individuals or families that are facing acutely elevated risk, like levels of potential harm. So this means basically anything that could be either increasing in severity, happening regularly, or potential harm to an individual themselves or others. So that's what acutely elevated risk is. And this way we can actually bring these individuals and connect them to essential services. It operates as a carefully disciplined conversation. So as we're actually taking in those individuals or families at the table, it's not about trying to triage that at the table. What we're trying to do is connect them to services immediately to be able to get them what they need to wrap around those supports as quickly as possible. It's also a tool for human service professionals in their existing roles to be able to apply the four-filter approach of being able to address those individuals.
So how exactly is the table going to work? How often do you meet and how do you find out who some of these individuals who might be at risk of harm in the community are?
Oh, so basically we meet once a week. So we have a regularly scheduled meeting that happens once a week. And on Mondays, what we look for is referrals to come forward. So we have a regularly scheduled meeting that's scheduled for 90 minutes. The 14 agencies are all looped in on a regular calendar invite. And on Monday afternoons, they're to submit any potential referrals that they may have to bring to the table. We don't ask who they are. We just ask, do you have something that you would like to bring to the table? Then we sit at the table when we have the meeting, that individual, when it happens, because we are new and we haven't had a referral yet. But theoretically, what would happen is they would bring a situation to the table. We would then find out whether or not it meets the threshold of acutely elevated risk. So they would introduce it as, I have an individual potentially who I have been working with. Let's say you're an educator and you're dealing with a child who has been truant. They've missed, 75% of their classes. You found out that last week they set a dumpster on fire, although there was no criminal charges. You found out that they've been sitting behind the bushes drinking, and you've been reaching out to the family and you've been unable to connect. And that's when the table itself would actually pause and determine whether or not this situation actually meets the acutely elevated risk. In my opinion, based on the scenario, I would say it does because it's increasing in likelihood, it's happening more often, and it's increasing in severity, and the potential of harm is there. And so then what we do is we say, okay, now we're going to introduce this individual and we're going to find out if anybody else has had any connections with this person, yes or no. And those agencies would then provide that input as to whether or not they've actually had any touch point with this individual. And then what we do is we assign agencies to then do what we refer to as a door knock. And so a door knock can take place in somebody's home, it could take place at a school, it could take place at another place of business or within an agency, perhaps with the person who brought it forward. And that happens within 24 to 48 hours in order to wrap some services around those individuals that are suffering. But it isn't a compliance model, so it's not punitive in any way, shape, or form. We don't take RCMP there with handcuffs and, those kind of things and deal with it that way. We deal with it totally from a voluntary compliance opportunity for outreach to that individual.
You've talked about different agencies and services. What are some of the agencies and services that might be doing this outreach that are part of the situation table in Port Hardy?
So we have RCMP, BC Ambulance, we have North Island Crisis and Counseling Center, which also includes the Foundry. We have YSTAR, we have Ministry of Child and Family Development, we have educators from School District 85, we have the Gwasala Nakoda Nation, as well as the Kwatsino Nation, that are also sitting at the table from health services. We have mental, did I mention mental health and addiction? Maybe I did. Island Health. We also have probation and victim services. Oh, and the Salvation Army. I forgot about the Salvation Army. I got them too. And the Sacred Wolf Friendship Center. There's so many, I feel like I might actually end up missing some.
This is a brand new initiative. Can you tell me maybe about what it was like before, or maybe the need that this is coming in to fill?
Yeah, so actually, interestingly, the Safer Places project was kind of probably the most closest thing that we did. So that was a pilot project that we ran over the last couple of years to connect individuals to those outreach community services, primarily mental health and addictions. And they came to us and said, we need a place where we have a safe place for people to go, safe place where we can outreach, safe place where people are going to be regularly going. And St. Creek Park was one place where people regularly go to hang out and has been traditionally used for that purpose. And so what we basically did is we allowed for law enforcement and for mental health and addictions and for BC Ambulance and for Salvation Army and ourselves to get together at a table and start talking about how we could create this safe opportunity. And I don't have the statistics in front of me, and so I'm sorry that I don't have that. But ultimately, the goal was to reduce conflict in the downtown with the businesses, because people were openly drinking in front of their businesses and there was undesirable things that were happening that they were complaining about. And we were trying to find a way to basically connect these people to services as quickly as possible. And because we've been dealing with, and I know that the RCMP had done some research as well into some of their calls, and they were seeing about 84% of their calls were mental health or addictions related. And so we went to Minister Farnworth, the Public Safety and Solicitor General at the UBCM in 2022 and advocated heavily, council advocated heavily to get support for a mental health car. And the minister said, you know, what it sounds like you guys have going on is actually a more robust situation table, where instead of, you know, looking at an individual, you're looking at a global community. And so he suggested that we apply for some funding for a situation table in order to help support the Safer Places project. So we're not stopping what we're doing globally, but we're also we're taking that to the next level.
This is People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. My guest is Heather Nelson-Smith, CAO of Port Hardy. We're discussing the community's new situation table. It's an initiative designed to bring organizations together for weekly meetings where they'd collaborate on how they can intervene to support individuals at elevated risk of imminent harm. I'm curious as well about how the size of Port Hardy, with a population around maybe 4,000 people, how that influences the dynamic of an initiative like this where you're really focusing on individual people.
Yeah, well, I think that honestly the benefit that we have is to be in a small community. But situation tables actually in BC originated in Surrey, in the city of Surrey. And I would highly recommend anybody who wants to go and see kind of some statistical information. That's where they proved that this model works really well. They were suffering from some of the same issues. And of course, just trying to get agencies together to try and collaborate was difficult enough. So they struck their situation table, I believe, is in 2015. So, and they've got some really great statistics on their website. But I think that for us, and being small, the other thing that I've noticed is that our collaborative approach, because we're more like, say it's so cliche, but we are like a family. We're all in it for the same reason. We all love the community. We're all there for the same people. And so I felt as though that the collaboration that we were able to pull together as part of the Safer Voices to Be project, and then the situation table that came afterwards, we were actually able to garner that much more support of the agencies around us. And the collaboration just happened almost organically and willingly. And because we're so small, it's that touch point, right?
Do you think there's anything else important? Maybe any context listeners in Nanaimo, in Victoria, in St. John, New Brunswick, on the other coast might benefit from knowing about Port Hardy and what's going on?
I think the biggest thing that I could probably say is don't be afraid to do something that you're not comfortable with doing. So social service is not typically a local government initiative. And I would say that get out of the norms and reach out into your community and find out what your community needs. And that means that you have to look at the needs of every member of your community, including the vulnerable population who typically don't have a voice at the voting table. And so it's a great opportunity to get to know who your service partners are and provide a different level of service to the people that you are serving.
And if we were to talk a year from now, once the situation table has been going for a while, how are you going to measure whether or not, or measure the impact and the success of this?
Yeah, so the situation table actually does require data collection that to be taken at every single situation. So we'll actually be tracking all of the acutely elevated risk factors, all the way from truancy to addiction to poverty to homelessness. And we'll be tracking all of those factors for each and every individual situation. But we'll also be reporting back to the table where the successes are and whether or not we were able to make something happen. We'll also be tracking if we see these acutely elevated risk individuals coming back to the table. And so there's actually a whole dynamic that we have to perform in order to show what's going on. But the other beauty of this data information collection is that we can actually use that to leverage other funding going forward. So health agencies could be able to pinpoint and say, you know, the majority of our situation table referrals are dealing with, let's just say, the opioid crisis or dealing with mental health constraints, and we're finding it difficult to connect services. And so they can actually take that information and use that to garner more support from higher levels of government in order to provide them with funding to support that.
On that front, is there capacity with the services that exist in Port Hardy right now to meet someone's needs who might come up as a case at the situation table who, say, for example, might benefit from housing?
So right now, housing is our biggest challenge. And as you are very well aware, we have the same problem that we have all over BC. And we have actually, prior to COVID, I would say we didn't have what we referred to as a homeless population. We had people that potentially were couch surfing or staying with other people. But since COVID, our homeless population has exponentially increased. And we do have a shelter in town, which has about 12 to 18 beds on a year-round basis, but it's not enough to service the community members that we have. So at this point in time, that is our biggest gap, is being able to connect housing to individuals should they have housing as their main issue.
You mentioned that homelessness wasn't really a large-scale phenomenon in Port Hardy prior to COVID, and suddenly it became one. From the perspective of someone living there, is it apparent why that happened?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. So a few of them would be that we had apartment buildings that had traditionally been used to house the underhoused or the unable to house individuals. So they were either staying with other people who were paying a lower income rent or maybe didn't have proper management or oversight over the building. And so people were able to gain access. And a lot of those buildings have now been turned over in management and, of course, have now cleaned up what needed to be cleaned up in order to make the buildings viable and profitable for those individuals. And unfortunately, those individuals were displaced at that time. And of course, it was roughly about August of 2022 when it became really apparent that those individuals had been staying in some of those apartment buildings. Mm.
And is there any kind of, you mentioned that, you know, those apartment buildings were closed and then someone was going to come in and do cleanup. Like, is that a situation that is or can be resolved?
Well, at this point in time, those apartment buildings have now been turned over and are now renting it, you know, $1,000 a month rather than the typical, you know, social assistance funded housing. And we do still have some in town, but of course it's just limited in terms of being able to house those that need to be housed. And we also have a hard to house population, which also makes it problematic for renters.
Is there anything else you think it's important to bring to the conversation today?
No, I think I hope I covered everything and all your questions. And that's my goal, is just to make sure that people understand what's going on and know what's happening in Port Hardy. And we're pretty excited about the work that we've done. And council's one of their number one priorities is harm reduction and poverty reduction. So we're hoping that we're being able to meet that benchmark.
Well, Heather, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Joe.
Heather Nelson-Smith is the Chief Administrative Officer for Port Hardy. We were discussing the community's soon-to-be-launched Situation Table. It's an initiative designed to bring community organizations together for regular meetings to coordinate on how to best help individuals at elevated risk of acute harm. There are situation tables operating in a number of communities in British Columbia, including Kelowna, Prince George, Penticton, and Nanaimo, where it's known as the Nanaimo Acute Response Table.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.